everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We are here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Morning, Francis.
Hello there, Mark.
How are you, young man?
I'm just fine. What did you have for breakfast this morning?
You're actually 3 months older than I am.
Why? What did you have for breakfast this morning?
Wheaties, clearly.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the bounty of the season, the local produce. I'm enjoying summer.
Tis the season. Everything got started a little late this year, but it's moving in a little bit.
Yeah, I just got back from, Ireland where strawberries are just in season in the part of Ireland in County Meath where I was. Mm-hmm. And I had some Irish strawberries, and I thought...
How do they compare to their New Jersey counterparts?
They're different. They have a different flavor to them, but they're very good. And I got them on a farm stand right off a local farm, and I was just... Made me a little reminiscent for home, and then I realized I was on vacation having a great time, and I completely forgot about that. But now that I'm back, I'm really enjoying the season, and I'm looking forward to the beginning of tomato season.
Yeah. Did you see there's a new law up for debate?
Yes.
Because this law definitely needs to be debated for a very long period of time.
What?
We have to debate this. We have to talk about how a tomato doesn't need to be called vine ripened. It doesn't need to be vine-ripened to be called vine-ripened.
Well, I don't need to debate about it.
We don't need to talk. We don't need to.
I think I've got my opinion pretty
clear. Come on. There's two camps here, isn't there?
Okay, yeah.
The ridiculous and the not ridiculous.
Exactly. Okay, here's the deal, everybody. The way it works now is that for a tomato to be called vine-ripened, it doesn't have to be vine-ripened. Uh-huh. It has to be red when it leaves the farm. Okay? Now, how most tomatoes are picked is you pick a green tomato, which is an unripe tomato, and you gas it. You squirt ethylene gas on it.
Right, a gas that tomatoes naturally give off as they're ripened.
Right, that helps them turn red.
Right, they help each other turn red.
Let me explain if you have that, as long as that happens before it leaves the farm, it can legally be called vine ripened in New Jersey. So now most New Jersey farmers don't gas their tomatoes and the farm. Processors gas California tomatoes for transport from tomatoes from Guatemala for transport. And let me explain what vine ripened as opposed to ripened by gassing. Now, what happens is you have a green tomato, right?
An unripe, unready tomato.
Unripe, unready green tomato, and you add gas. You know what happens? Turns red. You now have a red, unripe, unready.
I can't fathom that this fools people.
I know.
Okay, we're fooling people and turning their unripe tomatoes red and saying, "Ready, here you go."
That whole thing about when you put peaches in a bag. You know how the peaches will ripen if you put them in a bag? The reason you put them in a bag is because peaches naturally give off ethylene gas. Mm-hmm. And even off the vine, as it gives off the ethylene gas, if you've kept it in a bag, it will ripen in the bag. It will not continue to ripen. It will turn color in the bag, which is what ethylene gas makes it turn color. And actually, the peach will also get softer.
Right.
What happens with vine-ripened or tree-ripened fruit or vegetables is, see, they stay on the vine until they're ripe. The whole ripening process is a process whereby the plant keeps putting energy and sugar, get it? Sugar, sweetness, but good sugar, good for you sugar, into the fruit. And that continues. But once you take the plant off the tree, it's like, the tree doesn't have a wireless modem. You know, it can't get the nutrients into the product.
And you know what? And I understand if you want to call... That some tomatoes need to be picked while they're still green.
Yeah, sure. Commodity tomatoes.
I understand it. You need to ship them. They're going to be firm anyway.
Vine ripened tomatoes cost about 50% more than non vine ripened tomatoes because they're so perishable and so fragile that you can't really ship them.
True vine ripened tomatoes.
But let's call a spade a spade. Let's call a vine ripened tomato a vine ripened tomato. And I think this is a great I am rarely in the position of commending government, but we've been a couple of times. The Department of Agriculture in New Jersey, under the current governor, is doing great stuff.
Making some positive changes. Somebody's paying attention.
And here, let me read to you from the Star Ledger from a few days ago. If a tomato sold in Jersey is labeled vine-ripened, it should live up to its advertising, say state officials, who created a new proposal for New Jersey's most famous fruit. A gas called ethylene created naturally in fruits as they reach maturity is sometimes used to redden unripe fruit, not to ripen, but to redden,
right.
like tomatoes, and extend the shelf life. But the producer can still, the produce can still be labeled vine ripened because the tomatoes are red when leaving the farm.
Because it's stupid.
It's
okay, because it's a stupid thing. Vine ripened means ripened on the vine.
To me, it does. A new regulation would Mark, ensure that so-called vine ripened tomatoes are red when harvested, and see if they get red that way. That means that they're ripe.
Ready
See, redness is an indicator that they're ripe. Get it?
That's why they change colors, so the birds and things will eat them.
And I think that that's really great. Now, vine-ripened Jersey tomatoes. Now, most Jersey farmers, if you get a Jersey tomato, unless you're getting a Jersey tomato and it's, you know, before the season, you're getting very few farmers are tomatoes are fraudulently labeled Jersey tomatoes. Now, Jersey tomatoes will command about $15 a box as opposed to $10 a box for non-native fruit.
But they're also more perishable.
And they're also more perishable. And this is a way to protect and support our local farmers who are doing things right, and this great fruit that comes from here, there are seven varieties of tomatoes known as that we call Jersey tomatoes, and then there's also the Jersey beefsteak, which is a separate tomato, also very good. I don't think quite as good as the other tomatoes, but a lot less perishable. And I think that's a great plan overall.
It is great.
You know, in New Jersey,
I'm happy to see things changing.
Did you know that in New Jersey, 68 million tomatoes with a value of $28 million are sold each year?
You know, I honestly would have guessed more.
Yeah.
By all the tomatoes that you see everywhere during the season.
So this is serious stuff, and I think it also speaks to people want to know where their food comes from, and the only way we can support the local farmer is to buy more local fruit and support the local farmer, and the only way that we can do that reasonably is if we know where the fruit is coming from.
Right, and if we label it correctly, and our farmers deserve more money for truly vine-ripening their fruit.
Absolutely.
So let's give it to them.
So we can keep that happening, and we can keep them on the farms. But, you know, New Jersey is not the only region in the country, Mark. There are lots of other regions in the country, and they have their own special things, and you know that yesterday our show was about barbecue and the Big Apple barbecue block party I went to in June.
So enough about tomatoes then.
And we have some more interviews with some really interesting people from around the country. And we were going to talk with Ken Callahan, who started barbecue at – he's the executive chef for Danny Meyer at Blue Smoke.
In New York City.
In New York City, which really brought barbecue to Manhattan, which I think is a very fabulous thing. We're also going to talk to Ed Mitchell, who barbecues whole hog, which is a very difficult way to barbecue. It's just what it sounds like. You barbecue the entire pig. And then the chopped product that you get as a result of that is the most complex, one of the most complex meats I've ever had. And it's very hard to barbecue whole hog. We're going to talk to a woman from Smoky O's in St. Louis, Missouri, and she's going to talk to us about grilled snoot. I would tell you what grilled snoot is, but you should listen to the rest of the show.
We should wait for that.
The grilled snoot segment's my favorite. Please do stay
you
around.
Know, you and Chef spent obviously a long time in the city that day evaluating barbecue.
Yep.
And it's funny because when we first started, the idea was to do one show out of this. Mm-hmm. But there was so much interesting stuff that came out of these interviews that you and I decided that we easily could make this into two shows because of all the interesting characters and almost caricatures that you
yeah.
got to speak with.
Oh, and these people are really passionate about their food, and they have some really good points. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding, as it were, or the proof is in the queue. Queue is short for barbecue. Because these people then served us food, and it was really there. This guy, Ed Mitchell from North Carolina, had an 18-wheeler bringing up his barbecuers.
I love it.
An 18-wheeler. They look like little battleships. They were, I mean, it was amazing because he barbecues whole hogs. So he needs to, it's basically an oil tank. Like an oil tank you'd have in your home that they cut, put a hinge on, and barbecue.
Well, I think we're a little arrogant here in the Northeast sometimes to think that we have the, the only American food. There are all different kinds of American food being served across the country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what's different is not only that it's different from here, is that they're different from each other, and these people are really passionate about it. So when we come back, we're going to talk to a few of these folks about barbecue, and you're going to hear me eat some barbecue. That's more exciting than it sounds. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central
it better
Jersey.
Be.
Central Jersey, 14:50. The time is 11:15.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today, talking about Q, as we were yesterday. That's short for barbecue. New York City had a great little festival just a couple of weeks ago that Francis and the chef went to taste all kinds of different Q from all over the country. But one of the interesting places where you can get Q now is New York City. Francis, what are the names of a couple places from New York City that are making some good Q?
Blue Smoke. Virgil's.
Mm-hmm. We've been to Virgil's together.
Daisy Mays.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all sort of new places that have come up in the last few years. And it's very exciting because, you know, barbecue is not indigenous to New York. Barbecue is indigenous to a lot of different places. And, you know, there's in North Carolina, they went to the state legislature because the east of North Carolina likes barbecue sauce with tomatoes and the west of North Carolina,
so
it's vinegar and water sauce.
They're battling it out in the legislature.
Literally
right now.
Went to the state legislature.
I love it. I love that when people are passionate about their food.
But
I love it.
And there's a lot of barbecue in New York up in Harlem now.
Mm-hmm.
But the big splash downtown barbecue is Blue Smoke, owned by Danny Meyer. And,
oh, yeah.
And
Danny Meyer owns Union Square Cafe. He owns
Gramercy Tavern.
Some of New York City's best restaurants. And that he's doing barbecue is a really big deal, I think.
And he's a great restaurateur. And Ken Callahan is his executive chef at a restaurant called Blue Smoke. And they are really making waves in the barbecue world and here in New York. And what's more interesting about this guy is you can go and try his food. So let's listen to what he has to say.
Kenny Callahan, executive chef, pitmaster of Blue Smoke, New York City.
Now, you've kind of blazed new trails with Blue Smoke. I mean, for a big production barbecue, serious barbecue in Manhattan.
Sure.
How did you wind up doing that?
Well, you know, we originally intended to open up a joint, you know, just a barbecue joint. And then, you know, and I come from a fine dining background. You know, I was the executive sous chef at Union Square Cafe for the last 5 years of my career over there. And so, I mean, I was really running the place over there, and that's where my roots were, was in fine dining. So, you know, I just started messing around with trying to get the barbecue as best as we could be, and then really surround it with really high-quality ingredients and really kind of raise the level of all the food surrounding the barbecue. Because, as you know, typically in barbecue joints around the country, you have your brisket if you're in Texas, and it's beans and slaw. And,
right.
usually,
and one bottle of beer, and it's Rheingold.
Right, one bottle of beer, and usually one of those side dishes it's bad. You know? I'm just trying to bring the level of all the ingredients and food around the barbecue up to a different level to give people more options. And, you know, we're in New York City. They're much more sophisticated palates here,
yes.
And people respond to it.
How do you barbecue in New York City? How do you have a pit? How do you make that work? What makes barbecue work that's different than other people who are sort of the pretenders to the throne?
Well, you have to have the equipment. You have to have the ability to be able to produce good smoked quality meat, which, you know, that's what, if you don't buy the equipment, you don't invest in it. And it's very difficult to do in New York City with all the codes and the fire restrictions and regulations and all of that. So
you have special air scrubbing equipment for the emissions.
Yep, exactly, and it's very expensive stuff. And if you don't spend the money, then you're going to be cheating. You're either going to be steaming, braising, or boiling your ribs with some kind of liquid smoke or other marinade. And I mean, you can clearly tell the difference as soon as you see the meat and you bite into it. That stuff is either brown or gray on the inside. Was once you smoke with wood. Then it automatically gets that red hue to it,
right.
And that's the smoke ring.
And do you smoke with wood exclusively in at Blue Smoke? I mean, how's your equipment work at Blue Smoke? I mean, is it gas assisted? How does it work?
It's gas assisted. So what will happen is, I'll load up my pit, I'll fire it up with wood, and the gas will come in to ignite the wood. And then basically the wood will just burn down the coals, and then finishes off on the coals just like that.
Well, I got to tell you, you made a lot of waves in New York. I've been to Blue Smoke, and that's really pretty enjoyable. But it's nice to see you out here on the street as well.
Well, I'll tell you, it's an unbelievable day. I mean, you see the way New Yorkers respond to barbecue here. I mean, I can't even imagine how many thousands of people are here today. I mean, it's got to be 20,000, 30,000 people here just today, right?
Yeah, there are. And some of them are really good looking. I don't know if you noticed.
No, I haven't noticed. But
evidently, good-looking women like barbecue, and I like barbecue, too.
Exactly. I like barbecue, good-looking women, too.
Thanks a lot, man.
So, Francis, you went to this barbecue. I thought you were working, not working it. Well, what's up with that?
I was so playing it, Mark. I had the microphone with the CTC flag.
There are a bunch of interviews that we're not going to get to hear, aren't
No,
there?
But I got some numbers. Hey, man, girls who like fat, girls who like flavor. I'm a fat guy.
Actually, there you were probably a skinny guy.
I was, actually.
But, you know, you were talking to Ken Callahan there.
Wouldn't it make you upset if I tell you that I interviewed someone without even putting the microphone on? recording.
I would believe it, for sure.
That's a lie, but it's a nice fantasy.
So anything, we were talking about two different things, though, that I want to get into. The first is, I think that a lot of times people don't use as good of ingredients around their barbecue, and they spend so much time focusing on the barbecue itself that other things fall by the wayside. And we talked yesterday a little bit about bread, and some of the other side dishes aren't as good as they could be.
One of the things that Ken Callahan said was he is a chef. He is trained in other areas and then spent a lot of time learning about barbecue to be able to do barbecue and getting the right equipment and having the right support from Danny Meyer.
Right.
So he is able to do those things. Remember, most of these people who are making barbecue are making the barbecue the way that was handed down to them from generation
sure.
to generation.
Sure.
And so you know what? The rolls didn't get into the generational mix.
Well, that's, you know, and he mentioned liquid smoke. Okay, no true barbecuer ever would use liquid smoke. Liquid smoke is just what it sounds like. It's something you rub on the meat in liquid form, so it pretends that it was smoked.
Well, and when you go to corporate places, I mean, that's what you're getting.
Right, unfortunately.
So you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We'll be back in just a moment, and we're going to talk about Snoot from Smokey O's in St. Louis, Missouri. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125. You're back with The Restaurant Guys here, Francis and Mark. And we're talking about barbecue today from my little adventure that I took to the barbecue block party, the Big Apple barbecue block party in New York in June. And my favorite interview at all came from the people at Smokey O's in St. Louis, Missouri, and their specialty there is Snoot. And I didn't know what Snoot was, but I do now, and you're going to in just a second.
Your place is Smokey O's?
Yes, sir.
That's a pretty good name. Where's Smokey O's?
Located in St. Louis, Missouri at 1545 North Broadway.
We're a long way from Missouri. Was it worth the trip?
It increases our visibility toward the product that we serve, and the Snoot is becoming a nationally known product where previously it was only known in St. Louis.
What's Snoot?
Snoot is the anterior prolongation of the pig's nose.
Uh-huh. And that's your specialty?
Well, it's one of our specialties. Actually, barbecue is our specialty. We barbecue anything from the pig's nose to the actual, from the rooter to the tooter. Our process in preparing the snoot is actually a secret, but we do not grill it. We do not fry it. The process that we use, we have taken all of the fat out of that snoot. We also have dehydrated it, so there is no cholesterol in the snoot. It's a true delicacy that is really fat-free, and all of our customers, they become addicted. Once they try it, they become addicted to snoot. We can't keep it in the restaurant.
It's fat-free barbecue.
Exactly.
It's the only barbecue that's good for you.
Okay, thank you. And when you're in St. Louis, come to Smokey O's if you crave barbecue. We have it. Come get it.
Francis, did she really say from the rooter to the tooter?
Yeah.
Can I tell you the first time I heard that tape, I was listening to it. I was sitting next to Jennifer. I was like, Jennifer, rewind that. I think she said, we roast the whole pig from the rooter to the
from tooter. From the rooter to the tooter.
It's funny because she was a little bit rigid until then. She sounded a little tense.
Yeah.
And then as soon as she said from the rooter to the tooter, she loosened right
that's
up.
That's her line. I'd say I love it. And when she said we'll barbecue anything, I think she meant it. I was a little scared.
You know, and all these years that I've been calling you a snoot, I didn't know what I was calling you, but now I do.
Well, everybody out there.
The anterior prolongation of the nose, Francis. That's
the
you.
Pig's nose. Well, if any of you want to try snoot, we're not going to be serving it at Stage Left anytime soon, so you're going to have to go down to St. Louis, Missouri.
Hold on.
The address.
The line, yeah. We have it. Come and get it.
that's like my favorite. That's my favorite line of all. I want to get a bumper sticker that says that. So you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. We have it. Come and get it every day from 11 a.m. to noon. We'll be back after the news talking more with Ed Mitchell, who does Whole Hog Barbecue in North Carolina, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or just through restaurantguysradio.com. That was a beautiful segment we just did, Francis.
For those of you who just tuned in, we're doing a show today on barbecue, and we just had the most beautiful interview of all times.
You got to play that one more
all
time.
All right, you're going to hear just this, the one snitchet.
Play it one more time for us.
That is the best 10 seconds of the Restaurant Guys radio show so far.
Ever.
Okay. All right, you ready? Here it goes.
Barbecue is our specialty. We barbecue anything from the pig's nose to the actual, from the rooter to the tooter.
That was beautiful.
Oh, she's great.
That was beautiful. From the rooter to the tooter.
Jeez.
Everybody know what the rooter is?
Yeah.
And I don't need to explain the other one, do I? Oh, my God. That's hysterical.
Great. I got to tell you something.
That's going to Restaurant Guys Hall of Fame right there.
Snoot is an acquired taste, too. I'll tell you something.
Is it? How you got to tell me. How was the snoot?
That woman was very nice.
Fat-free snoot.
She was very nice. Anyway, it's not going to be a special at Stage Left anytime soon.
We're not doing that.
But I have to say, the other stuff...
It's not snoot. Snoot. It's not good. It's not just good. It's good for you.
It's good for you.
I got their new tagline.
You know, it reminds me that we have it, come and get it. Reminds me of the Brock. When I was working in a supermarket as a young kid, I used, you know those Brock's candies that you used to buy?
Sure.
The first bulk candy that you could get?
Yeah.
I used to love those. And the Brock's logo was on the side of every box as we'd pack them out. You ready for the Brock's logo?
Yeah.
Candy is good food. Eat some every day.
I
hope they didn't pay somebody a lot to come up with that one.
Well, you know, the best part of that last segment we just did was it really sounded like she was trying to do a commercial.
Oh, yeah, she was. And I let her because it was a great one.
She got, and it's good from the rooter to the tutor.
That's it.
And there it was, commercial over.
That's it.
Commercial went right into comedy.
I think that's part of the commercial. Well, you know, I have another guy that I talked to, a guy named Ed Mitchell from North Carolina. Now, this guy, I think he's my favorite over everybody that was there. This guy came up from North Carolina with his own 18-wheeler filled with the things to do, the barbecue pits to do whole hog barbecue. So what he basically does is he takes your home oil tank, cuts it in half, and puts a seam in it, and the coals go on the bottom, and the pig goes on the top. He was splitting the pigs. He was roasting them half at a time. That's his version of cheating, right? But he does.
So it takes 16 hours. Right,
exactly.
Of 25.
But in North Carolina, he does the whole hog together. And what's interesting about it is he takes the meat of the whole hog, and so you get all the different parts of the, you know, the bacon and the belly and the tenderloin and the trotters and the whole thing. And he doesn't start like different pieces. That's all cut and scraped out of the pig in a certain way. And then you get a bit of the skin, and it's unbelievably complex. It's really unbelievably complex. And literally, 4-star restaurant in Manhattan served this man's barbecue as a component on a dish. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
So he's the real deal, that's what you're saying.
Oh, man. And to see this, you know, convoy of things that he'd rolled out of his own 18-wheeler and all going and all being attended with loving care, it's really great. Why don't we hear what Mr. Mitchell has to say?
Love it.
Ed Mitchell from Ed Mitchell's in North Carolina.
All right, we're here. We're talking with Ed Mitchell of Mitchell's Barbecue in Wilson, North Carolina. And you've come all the way from Wilson, North Carolina to New York City. How's the trip?
Oh, trip's been great.
Yeah?
Yep, trip's been great. Beautiful day.
And hospitable or nasty, like they say?
Oh, the great, great, very hospitable.
I got to say, I'm looking at a line right now of hundreds of people of New Yorkers standing in line on Madison Avenue to wait for Ed Mitchell's barbecue. How's that make you feel?
Great, super great. As a matter of fact, these guys have adopted me as their home guy, and I'm very proud of that.
So now all the barbecue that you have, all the pulled pork and everything, this is whole hog you did today?
Yeah, I'm the only crazy guy to come up here and cook 30 whole hogs. Isn't that something?
Well, now, where did you cook 30 whole hogs in New York? Where did you have the equipment? You truck it in yourself?
Oh, no. Those 10 cookers out there, my man. We rotate 10 around.
I didn't notice that before. You have a convoy.
That's
looks
right.
Like 10 battleships out here make whole hogs.
That's what we got. And we brought them up on my 18-wheeler transporter, which is over there. And each one of them have to be individual chambers because each one has to cook separately for 12 or 14 hours.
All right, I'm impressed.
Okay.
Now, what would you say makes Eastern barbecue different? We're asking everybody this sort of same question. What makes Eastern barbecue different from Texas barbecue, different from regional barbecues around America?
According to the history of barbecue, the North Carolina has been considered somewhat the cradle, and it started out cooking a whole hog. And as it moved around to various other locations, then people began to separate different portions that they were comfortable cooking. But really, it originally started out cooking that whole hog.
Chef, why don't you describe to people what we're looking at?
Looking at, what is this, an oil tank?
Converted into a chamber.
A whole oil tank?
Yep. Converted into a chamber because it holds heat very well. And...
Oh, my God.
So
say oh my God.
Oh my God.
We have a split pig roasting over. Is this charcoal underneath?
Charcoal, and we have a blend of hickory wood.
Oh, smell that wood.
Yeah.
Smell the pig in the wood. You can still see the USDA stamp on the shoulder of the pig.
Oh, yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Everything but the head. Hoof on.
That's right.
Two halves of a gutted pig.
Yeah.
And look, its name was Mary. It's got the collar around its neck.
Okay.
All right, now, you got this whole hog. It's all cooked all the way through. And you just pull all the meat? I mean, do you handle different parts of the pig differently or what?
No. Once he's done, we take him all up, and then we put him on a chopping block. We ask it can haul the meat right out, and then we go through a chopping technique that gives you that blend of flavors that we were talking about, which blends all the different portions of the animal, like the tenderloin. The chef knows what I'm talking about. The parts to make the bacon out of and the sausage. And then we blend it together and give you a taste of what it really is supposed to taste like.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. Thanks a lot, Mr. Mitchell.
Quite welcome. Thank you.
Let's go try some of Mr. Mitchell's food. This just looks different. Now, we just got talking to Mr. Mitchell about why his pork is different, because he does a whole hog, and then he basically blends up all the different parts of the hog. That means, you know, some of the less appetizing stuff, some of the more appetizing stuff. There were definitely feet on those pigs, so they wound up somewhere, so they're in here, man.
Exactly. You know, it's funny to watch. I mean, it's almost like watching an artist at work. He's taking apart this whole animal and just putting together this blend of meat that's just, it's delightful. I mean, there's no other way to describe it.
It looks different than all the other barbecue you've had here.
Yeah, well, it's funny to listen to him describe his chopping method when they take the pig apart. As soon as they probably pull the skin back and they start to kind of combine the meats in the different areas of the pig to make up this blend. It's funny, you had just mentioned the word pâté before, and it has almost that texture. It's unique, and it's oh so tasty.
It's America's answer to a pâté, because like he said, you do get the pig's feet, and you get the you get the trotters in there, you get the bacon part in there, you get the fat back in there. It's absolutely remarkably complex and delicious.
I mean, food like this is special. I mean, it's almost sad that he's so far away.
I'd go to North Carolina for this. I mean, not tomorrow, but let's go back and get some more.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Francis, I have whole new respect for the expression going whole hog.
Wow. That I'm dreaming about that still. That was so amazing.
I'm very upset that I missed it. And I'm even more upset you didn't bring some home for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You were home with the baby. You
weren't even
at work.
Come on. Now, that wasn't that far. You could have brought some.
That was really, really complex food. And when I tell you that, literally, if we served that and people didn't know what it was, and we served like the meat itself and put a slightly different presentation on it, four star food.
So that was your favorite Ed Mitchell's?
I have to say it was. The Whole Hog Barbecue was a revelation to me. And you can find more about this festival at www.bigapplebbq.org, you know, and they'll...
So let me see if I got this right. What he did was he cooked the whole hog, and then when he presented it to you as for your portion, you got a mixed
plate. I got a
plate
full of meat.
Of all the different parts of the
Yeah, no, but it just, it looked like there was sort of, it wasn't ground meat, but it was chopped meat. You didn't know what was what. It was sort of like a hash of the different parts of the hog.
And he took just like a big cleaver and worked it all down?
I have no idea.
Okay.
We saw them take the hogs off and put them in the chopping block, but he said he had a special technique. I didn't know exactly what it was. But, I mean, it was all the different parts of the meat and spices and the fat was throughout, and you could taste all these different textures. It was absolutely incredible, and I would go down to North Carolina for that. And you can find out more about how to get to these places by going to our website at www.restaurantguysradio.com.
Yeah, we'll definitely put all the websites to each place that we talked about in the last 2 days.
And if you're a real foodie and feel like making a road trip, you could do a road trip barbecue, take a couple of days, and go to barbecue in a couple of different places.
It sounds great.
I mean, I have a motorcycle, and I'm thinking that might be a nice little way to, you know, find a destination. You know what I mean?
No, I would definitely do it if I didn't have to go with you.
Well, I don't know that I could control the motorcycle with you on the back of it there, Mr. Mark.
I'm sure you could.
But we'll put that up on the website, and we'll also put some things up on the website about barbecuing. If you want to try barbecuing at home, I suggest you probably don't start with the whole hog thing. But there are ways to do it and be real about it. It's really quite a large endeavor, but there's a book that's been written about it, and we'll talk to you about that in just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 1145. Back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott, and we're here today talking about barbecue. And we were talking about how you can find out more information on barbecuing Barbecuing real barbecue, the slow, long cooking barbecue that you can do at home, is very difficult, but if you want to try it, there's a DVD, an interactive DVD cookbook called BBQ Secrets, The Master Guide to Extraordinary Barbecue Cooking. That's N with an apostrophe.
Yeah, just remember, this isn't a two-hour process.
No.
This is a long, long slow cook.
It's like overnight, 16, 18 mm-hmm. hours if you want to really barbecue, and you got to tend the fire. So,
right.
You know, you got to buy some equipment, because if you want to bury like you did in
yep.
college in the backyard, you got to have somebody standing there.
Yep.
You got to keep a thermometer in there.
It's a long process, and you can buy whole hogs in Manhattan in the meat district.
Yeah.
You can just go right into those yep. places, order a whole hog, and they'll have it ready for you, and you just throw it in the back of the pickup, and off you go.
or in the SUV, and off you go.
You know, we were talking yesterday about that we would do
right.
at Sigma Pi.
And your friend Casey the Madman.
And Casey Fowler was a madman. And I was saying, my first foray into the New York City meat market was with Casey to get the pigs for the Sigma Pi pig roast. But the thing I didn't, that I left out of yesterday's discussion of this,
yeah.
was Casey, after the first couple of years of going into the meat market, that wasn't good enough for Casey. After that, he started going to the farm directly, butchering the pig himself.
Killing the pig himself.
Right, killing the pig himself, and then he would bleed it and bring it back to the fraternity house.
I love that.
Where he would then cook it for 18 hours and stand guard over that pig so nobody would get to touch it until that pig was absolutely perfect and absolutely ready. And let me tell you something. Holding 150 drunk people from a fraternity party away from a pig that's roasting and been roasting in the front yard for 17 hours.
Fortunately, Casey's a big guy, and so are you.
That's a lot of work.
I'd say that's a lot of fun, and I think
it was a blast.
I think it's important when people get. I mean, when people do like what Casey did, is like, you know, if you're not a vegetarian and you eat meat, I mean, for people mm-hmm. to understand that, you know, we do kill animals for food, but whether we
right.
do it humanely or not, how we do it, how that animal raised, those things are all, you know, it's not a simple black and white issue, you know.
Right. Well, I like that he went all the way back and started at the beginning of the process.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things that we don't do enough of, and we kind of divorce ourselves from the process of bringing meat to the table. It is a process, and it doesn't. Chickens don't come quartered.
Right.
That's not the way they occur in nature.
Where does chicken come from? It doesn't come in a plastic bag.
Right.
Hey, listen, I want to recommend another book. There's a book that was written by a pit master, a great pit master called Mike Mills, and it's called Peace, Love, and Barbecue. And it's a survey and tales of barbecue from all around. And what basically...
I get it, tales of barbecue.
Get it? So what most people have said about this book, though, is the recipes in it, they've all left something out of the recipes, you know. but, you know, the secret ingredients.
Secret ingredients,
out.
Sure.
But I think that's a really great book, and you really get a perspective on national barbecue, and that's a really good guide if you want to go around the country looking at barbecue. Or maybe just go to the Memphis in May Festival mm-hmm. and go for the barbecue festival, where over 1,000 teams compete to win various prizes, and one of course, is crowned as the best overall barbecue. You know, when we have barbecue around here, I don't know what they, you know, there's a lot of local beer drinking with it going on mm-hmm. down south.
But usually that would be a typical thing to do, is to drink beer with.
But I'm a wine barbecue guy. I like wine.
Well, I think that people don't realize that wine can go with barbecue, too.
I think wine can go really great with barbecue. I think mm-hmm. beer goes really well with barbecue as well. But with barbecue, which is different than your grilled meat out on the mm-hmm. in the backyard, because barbecue is not a rare red meat. One of the surprising things to go with barbecue is German or Austrian Riesling.
It's a great touch. Actually, we have a dish on the menu right now. It's a spicy lamb sausage, and Riesling is beautiful with it.
Mm-hmm.
With great, you know, especially if it's a little bit spicy.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a little bit of spice to it, Riesling is a great, great compliment.
People are afraid of Rieslings because they think that Rieslings are always sweet, and often mm-hmm. German Rieslings do have some sweetness to them, but they range in from the very dry, the Trocken wines from Germany are very mm-hmm. dry, and the Haubtrocken wines are very dry, all the way to some of the Auslese and Bernauslese are dessert wines, but that's something you need to ask your local merchant about,
right.
or your wine guy in the restaurant.
I'll tell you right now, even for your backyard barbecue, as long as you're not having rare red meat, this is
right.
not going to go with your rare cheeseburger.
Right.
Okay, but for your ribs that have been cooking for 6-8 hours,
right.
for your sausages, especially
if you like your burgers
a spicy
like,
sausage.
If you like your burgers like my Irish relatives like their burgers, which is cooked for 6 hours, they will go well with it. But aside from rare red meat, people are really, I can't recommend Riesling enough, and mm-hmm. there are actually some Australian Rieslings that are really great as well. And it's very complex how it interplays, and it's sort of surprising because people think, oh, I have meat, I have to have red wine.
Right.
No, you don't. And the reason will also go with fish, if you like oysters, one of the things I like to do out in the backyard is I always like to, whenever I can, open oysters to order or open them on the grill.
But there are some reds that'll work here, too.
Yeah, I think. You know, well, what do you suggest, Mark?
Well, if you go with a Zinfandel, a red Zinfandel, not a white Zinfandel, Zinfandel, or you go with a Syrah or a wine like that that's going to have a little bit higher fruit content to it.
A little petite Syrah, maybe.
Yeah, a little, and a wine that'll have some softness and some spiciness to work as both a complement with the barbecue sauce.
And those wines, Zinfandel and Syrah and petite Syrah, will also go well with your rare hamburgers and your rare steaks. And so they're a very versatile red wine. I can't stress to you enough, if you're outside and you're serving wine, especially red wine, you need to chill it down. It cannot, if it's 78 degrees outside, your 78-degree wine is going to taste like alcohol and lollipops.
Right, and even worse when it gets up to 90 or 95 degrees. You're not going to understand why the wine tastes so bad. Cellar temperature, we're talking about 55, 58, 62 degrees, especially for these wines, the reds that get higher in alcohol.
And don't be afraid to take a little bit of that red wine and just drop it on ice for a few minutes if it gets too hot. It's perfectly okay once you've opened the bottle.
Francis doesn't mean put ice cubes in it. He means drop it on ice, put the whole bottle on
ice. Yeah, you don't want to dilute it with the ice cubes. And so we'll put up on the website in a little bit later this afternoon some suggestions for wines that you should have and shouldn't have for your summer barbecue. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Francis and Mark, Central Jersey, 1450, the time's 1155. Back to The Restaurant Guys. Mark, we've done our whole show today on barbecue, and one of the things that I think is so interesting is when people around here say, oh, come on over to my house for barbecue. They should say, come on over to my house to grill, because I think that the guys in New York, I asked them all what they had to say about local people barbecuing, and let's hear what Ed Mitchell had to say about local New Jersey barbecue.
Now, you're as serious can be, and I want to go on another end of the spectrum. Our radio station is broadcast out of New Jersey, where we got a lot of guys who have day jobs during the week, and they got a nice suburban lawn in the backyard, and they got a Weber grill, and it's probably even just a gas grill. They turn it on, light it up, and throw a couple of steaks on there, and they say to their friends, they say, why don't you come over to my house for a barbecue? What do you have to say to those people?
Well, I say, you know, those guys are comfortable doing what they do. That's their thing.
But is what they do barbecue?
If they want to do barbecue, tell them to come find Ed Mitchell. let's put on about 175, 200-pound whole hog, and let's see what we got.
Gonna need a bigger grill. Thanks for talking to us, Mr. Mitchell.
You're quite welcome. Thanks
a lot.
All right.
That was absolutely great. I'll tell you, I missed it this past one. I will not miss it next year.
I know, we're going
There's
together.
There's no shot that you're going without me next year. I promise not to have another baby next year, and I am going.
I had this picture when I was talking to the guy of you with your Weber grill in the backyard and me showing up with a 175-pound hog. Throwing it on there. I don't think it got over so well.
Francis, this has been a great two shows for me. I love this kind of food. I absolutely adore a great barbecue sauce, one that's not too sticky sweet, one that's just kind of smoky and delicious.
And in an era when you can get everything delivered to your home, you still have to travel if you want to try the different kinds of barbecue. And I think that that's great because the barbecue itself can be a destination. I recommend it for a summer trip. I think next spring I'm going to go on a barbecue tour of the Middle West and South.
So maybe we'll catch a ball game in Kansas City and go get some Kansas City barbecue.
Sure. You'll have to explain the rules of the ball game to me.
Three outs an inning.
But I know barbecue innings pretty well. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this time with us, a couple of days talking about barbecue and touring the country. And next year we're going to do it again. Maybe we'll go down and do it ourselves. Have you enjoyed yourself, Mark?
So much.
I certainly have. Well, you spent another hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450 the time. It's 12 noon.